Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome to another installment of Free Bonus Friday. And you're like, Brett, it's Saturday. I know, but hear me out, okay? I woke up this morning very motivated by a couple of things to do a Free Bonus Friday. And these two things so motivated me that it actually didn't even matter that it's not Friday. So here we go. Number one, I wake up to two new supporters. Thank you, Lloyd. Thank you, Michael. And second, I've been doing show prep for next week's content. It's probably going to be, geez, at least two episodes with my friend Daryl Becker. Daryl hasn't been on the show in a while. He's been on the show a lot, but not for a while. So I thought this conversation would be a good way to get acquainted with him, even though it features a whole bunch of people. Me, Richard Grove, Kevin Cole, Dylan Lefebvre, and Daryl. And of course, it was 4 years ago, so you have a 4 years the wiser Daryl to look forward to on the show next week. This conversation was recorded back in the summer of 2016. It is shortly after the Orlando nightclub shooting. You're going to hear the first 9 minutes just so you can get your bearings as far as like what we're talking about and where we're at with it. And then I basically just selected another, 15-minute clip at random. I also want to say that I have put this entire almost two-hour conversation for those of you who have time this weekend or whenever or anytime really in the rest of our lives, you can listen to this. It's up on Patreon for free. There is a link in the show notes directly to that episode. You can just go and listen to the whole thing. If you go and do that, yeah, there might be some insights that are a little bit dated. Jeez, imagine going back to the world of 2016 from right here. There are some insights that are timeless. There are portions of the conversation where it's clear we're talking about the Orlando nightclub shooting. And there might be portions of the conversation where it seems like we could be using some kind of time displacement equipment to discuss the events of our current times. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this or the longer version, if you so choose. And I will talk to you guys again next week.
All right, so we don't have a formal agenda for today. It's just Daryl was on the East Coast, and that attracts people who are familiar with Daryl's work. And then last time we were together, Brett, we talked with Kevin about a chapter in his book, and we need to do another one of those. So without a formal agenda, I'm going to leave it to Daryl since he's traveled the farthest to be on the show. And you can pick today's starting topic, and then we'll just go from there organically.
What I definitely love talking about is perception management. We have all these interesting current events that just happened. I'm pretty fascinated by watching how people react to things. And of course, I was referring to the shooting in Orlando, Florida, but just to like, you know, give a little timestamp to what our discussion is. But for me, it's fascinating to see how people are managing their own perceptions, those of us who do that, and those of us who are being managed. I find it really fascinating to see how people do that. And honestly, I'm just going to throw it out there. Just the types of intelligence, including emotional intelligence, also pop up and seeing how that goes.
Brett's fascinated that I can write and look you in the eye at the same time.
That's terrific.
Yeah. All right, so let's collect a little data. The specific that you're giving is the recent Orlando shooting, and I think it's safe to call it a shooting, even though none of us have seen ballistic evidence, but we're told it was a shooting in which 103 people were tragically shot, allegedly by one individual. Let's just talk about the individual pieces of knowledge that we've each gathered about that topic, because we've all watched it and figured it out, you know, and watched it unravel through different sources, I'm sure. So from my perspective, I didn't even know it happened until I was talking to Brett on Sunday. I was just making sure the audio was on, because who wants to talk for a couple hours and then have the audio, right?
I've done it.
So Brett said that, and so I came out to the living room. I turned on like CNBC or whoever had coverage that didn't have a commercial on at that point, and I started watching what they were telling me about it. And at first, and still, it's really tragic, 103 people got shot. And my first thought was, wow, this looks a lot different than Sandy Hook, where all the people who got shot actually died on the scene without even seeing medical attention or doctors or anything like that. So it seemed maybe more authentic and less scripted than what I observed in some of these other instances, because 53 or 50 people at that point were shot and the rest of the people were wounded. And that's a more balanced ratio between people killed by the assailant and then people also, you know, just getting hit by a bullet as they ran away. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I came at it from. I heard about it from Brett, and then I watched some MSNBC, and then I've picked up some other topics about it during the week, about FBI connections and stuff like that. But we can just go around the table. What did you learn about it, Dylan?
I heard about it just from
hanging out on the internet pretty much. The first time I logged on, and let's see, it happened Sunday morning. I get up kind of early in the morning, earlier than most. I'm up by 4:30, and I think that's right when it happened. Like within a half an hour with the, nah, it's in the same time zone. So it happened at 4:30, something like that, I think is what time it happened.
I thought it happened at 2 a.m. I didn't.
That's when it started, and then it was over by like 5 or 6.
Right, because the cops sat outside for 3 hours. That was another tidbit I picked up. So yes. I don't know if that's factual and actual. I've yet to research it, but that's my understanding thus far.
Does anyone know what, I know we're talking about for the whole event, like a 3 hour time frame, but does anybody know like what the window was of the shooting happening in? Like that many people shot in?
Yeah, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Yeah, there was a large portion of that that was supposedly a hostage standoff where shots weren't being fired, where they had barricaded the shooter into the bathroom. But they're saying the timeline is around 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. that evening.
So the concentration of all those people being shot was probably much now, or like I'm guessing pretty much all at once.
Well, my question was, if 11 cops fired their weapons during that process, how many of the people shot got shot by the SWAT team and not the assailant? But I don't think that's become publicly available yet.
There's actually an article on that today discussing the likelihood that many of the people in the final hostage takedown or whatever, you know, as it's being told, were killed by, you know, gunfire from the police. And they're admitting that, but I don't think they're going to take it down ballistically and like assign blame to somebody. You know, they're going to put it in some kind of a fog of war, you know, had to take them down. Things happened, you know, kind of a situation. But yeah, they were saying 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. There's a witness account of seeing the individual walking across the street towards the bar at like 1:45. So he may have been outside for a little bit or something. But that's the story.
What about you guys?
My story starts a little bit further back, where one night, as I slept last week, my computer upgraded to Windows 10.
Did I send you an email about that?
You did, and, you know, I kind of debated it, and I didn't know the pros and cons, and I talked to my tech guy, my friend who does a tech show, yeah. Sovereign Tech, it's called, yeah. And he said, well, you know, Windows 10 is going to be a more efficient operating system, but it does have these security considerations. Yeah. So I said, okay, well, I'd like to see how a lot of these things that I'm frustrated with, how they run on my computer, I want to see if they run better with this system.
Sure, because you have 30 days to roll it back.
Well, I stopped my Asus laptop that I also use from upgrading to Windows 10 to never upgrade to Windows 10 or update to Windows 10.
So for those of you who don't know at home, Windows is automatically upgrading users of Windows 7 and 8. And you just turn on your computer one day and it says the Windows is upgraded to Windows 10. And to me, that was a break in my voluntary rules of interacting with these people when you just upgrade a computer. I figured out how to roll it back. And then the way you prevent that is a product called Never 10, which I used on all the computers I have. Did you use it?
Okay, but you can use their settings to stop it from happening, too.
Basically, they do it to you, and then you have 30 days to roll it back.
Not if you catch it in time. There's a way, like, I was able to cancel the updates on, my computer that had Windows 7.
All right.
So anyway, one of the new features of Windows 10 is it tells you the news. Not the real, but it's like, you know, it's like USA Today. It gives, so I'll turn on the computer in the morning, and it'll be like Hillary Clinton's face will pop up as soon as it turns on, and I'll be like, oh, Jesus Christ. I wasn't ready for that. So it took me a while to acclimate to my computer showing me, you know, a lot of the news that I actually try to avoid. You know, that's not exactly, at least not how I want to start my day. So 50 killed in Orlando nightclub shooting came up the morning I talked to Rich. I gathered some mainstream media stories. I wanted to see what they had to say about it, see if there was some kind of coherent picture emerging. And I went to YouTube and InfoWars.
Yeah.
So here's a spectrum. Here's some different points I can plot on it. And then when I get more time, I'll find my way towards the middle or towards wherever the truth is, I was thinking.
Yeah. But you got to take in a bunch of different information from different sources that you might not watch or look into every day or trust. Mm-hmm. But it's like, what are they saying about it versus what these people are saying about it? And what evidence actually exists? And how do you identify that?
Well, yeah, because the mainstream media is very interesting and useful because it's like, is there a pattern here? Is this something that's familiar to me because I've seen it before? Is there something novel about this, as you were noticing?
Yeah.
And that was basically how I learned about it. And, my attention had to be redirected to some more productive things. So I still cannot say I'm an expert on the situation.
Yeah, we're just watching the dust settle.
Yeah, exactly.
What about you, Darryl?
It's kind of like way too early for me to like say I've come to a conclusion. But what I do watch, because I certainly am on the Facebook, is I'm watching things unfold. Those who believe X, those who believe Y, I'm watching that whole thing going on. And basically, yeah, I'm seeing that there's those people. It's like it's captured a lot of the squares and a lot of the circles. So the people who've already been
cookie
managed,
cuttered.
Basically,
yeah.
They've been cookie cuttered. They went through their traumatic experience that we call schooling. They are definitely either like guns bad or guns good, and that type of thing. You know, government good, government bad, that type of thing. And then I luckily I'm in this little tiny camp where I'm still saying, nope, too soon, still collecting evidence, and I'm measuring people's levels of emotional intelligence. I'm seeing, like, how do people actually manage what they choose to post right now, or what they choose to type or say comment-wise, or what's going on?
Is there a filter on their thinking at all, or are they thinking at all, or is this just unveiled reactions where they're just like...
And to some degree, and like these are people like, okay, this one's my acquaintance. This one's like, I really care about this person. Like my first friend on the Big Island, like really care about this person. You know, like, and like that kind of thing. I'm like, okay, I see. I understand. And I know it all makes sense. So like from a human perspective, I want to understand when things like this go down and I see the credibility factor going on and I see certainly there's a divide and conquer that is potential. I work to make sure that I identify potential points of weakness in that bridge of empathy between myself and others, between others and each other. I want to understand the structure for how people relate to each other. And that's so like right now, this is what I'm doing. It's like it's a social experiment for me. It's like they threw this whole event out there, contrived or not, and I'm watching the things go down.
But there's definitely something there that is yet to be learned, and I don't think they spoon-fed it to us through CNN or MSNBC on the first day that it happened, because we know how much those people do as far as investigations. What rumor can we put in the ticker right now? I mean, it's a rumor mill, and you're just seeing what different people call in. And I realize that human beings are fallible and that you know no one's given exactly information that's correct at the time when they're reporting that, but... You see all these contradictions, and they don't feel the need to explain it away. The news, you know, the news.
And this kind of fuels the fire of confusion, ultimately, too, because this becomes the evidence of revision problem. A story breaks, and there's all this information that comes out about it.
Sure, like Sandy Hook.
A lot of it's wrong.
Yeah.
And then people who we could call conspiracy theorists, who make a lot of these YouTube videos.
People who think crisis actors are always involved.
Exactly. They say, ah, but look, 5 minutes after, they were saying this. So that creates a storm of confusion in its own right. These people not actually doing investigation, just spreading rumors.
So you're just saying there's a fine line between actual investigation and noticing the contradictions to...
That media format just doesn't really allow for that. And that's I'm not saying that it's... It's the fault of the format, because you've got CNN and MSNBC,
they're
Fox,
competing, but they're not competing.
All to be... Isn't that interesting? To all be first with something, and it doesn't matter what it is.
Or
it's
if
just
it was correct in hindsight.
Tuned in.
You know?
Right. No, of course, that
and
never
what
matters.
What matters is how many people actually view them, not how often they get the news right.
How many stupid questions they can ask and how many stupid answers they can get.
It's like a rumor about a Wall Street company can make the stock go down, yet the company might do good business and all this other stuff. So the actual actions of that corporation aren't what drives... I'm saying there's a disconnect between a stock price and what a company actually does. Just like there's a disconnect between what the media companies call their success, the you know MSNBC, CNN, because they got viewers, and when the success metric should be accurate information.
Well, accuracy is not incentivized. No. Eyes on your channel is all that's incentivized.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And how does this confusion benefit the ruling class? How do these things... I mean, yeah, once again, you can count the ways.
The audience between MSNBC and CNN and Fox, they're all divided in society because you get the Fox angle or you get CNN or you get MSNBC. Not many people will cruise back and forth between channels and be like, what are these people actually being told? And then you think about who owns those companies and why they might be telling them that stuff and maybe not some of this other stuff that an investigative journalist might find.
It's a noise-to-signal ratio.
Yep. Signal to noise, yeah.
Well, in this case, noise to signal, right? And which is how it benefits them. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Because then, like, people are like, oh, gosh, that's a tremendous amount of noise. And the signal is Fox. The signal is CNN. The signal is MSNBC. The signal is President Obama. That's what passes as the signal, because everything else is just a cacophony.
I just remember reading someone comment about how former cheerleader, she's guilty. Like, and, like, I'm reading this guy, and I'm like, really, dude?
Happened to the attitude that 99 guilty people should go free so that one man was not in prison wrongly, right? Isn't that how the saying goes? Mm-hmm. Like where you value actually getting things right, and sometimes you make a mistake, but you're not penalizing innocent people in those mistakes necessarily. So I think it's a values change between what people actually accept as truth and justice or, you know, enforced fairness through laws or culture or whatever, and what actually goes on. And while the talking heads on the media will tell you one thing, they're doing that, like, putting up a wall so that this other stuff goes on behind, you know?
There's a... I think when people are, of course, there's the emotional impact going on. We have these emotional responses. So if people were traumatized in the years leading up to the present, if they were punished and they were rewarded sometimes, there is a serious, unfortunate emulation of that behavior where they want to see other people punished and perhaps some certain other people rewarded. And it fulfills that little emotional space in them. And rather than for them to turn the camera back on themselves and look directly at it, it's very much instead just like, no, I'm going to listen to this inner voice. I want to see some pain going on. Not looking at the restitution factor, they're looking at a punishment system.
Well, and Mike Judge pointed that out. Like, I don't know if that was his point, but Idiocracy, Ow My Balls, is a bunch of people sitting around. The most popular show is watching somebody hurt themselves, right? And that actually has turned into a phenomenon today of reality TV shows.
Jackass.
You know, and it's like, oh, you know, people get on reality TV shows, and you know that they're being scripted and all that other stuff behind the scenes, and yet it's severely successful right now in the markets.
I think the entire political arena is ouch my balls. Because that's really what it is. It's like, I want to see bad things happen to my enemies.
Yeah, instead of solutions to our problems, we're being incentivized to watch people like beat each other up.
But then they're just your enemies in your mind because they're not actually physically doing anything to you, right?
But
the people who are competing in this political process right now are for the highest office. They seem to have this perfectly calculated. Nobody has a message of. I mean, they have slogans like Donald Trump says, "Make America Great Again." I don't know what Bernie Sanders' slogan is, but if you listen to how they're engaging people with their speech, it's all about, look, somebody's got to fucking pay. And I'm the guy to make them pay, right? It's the same deal with Bernie Sanders as it is with Donald Trump. Donald Trump's like, we're shipping people out. We're throwing nets over people and sending them home. And Bernie Sanders says, we're gonna stick it to the people who can stick it to you.
Exactly. Point fingers at telling you who's wronging you.
Yeah. And so that's traumatic conditioning 101.
Exactly.
We have these people doing
here's what's
that.
Wrong and I'll
think
tell you
that
how to fix
someone
it.
Like Kevin Cole is a better candidate. If we're going to have a president, I think he's more qualified than any of the people actually running.
Yeah, don't, no conversation there. I got no comment on that.
He's like no masters, no
president,
no slaves.
Not fit for it.
No masters, no slaves.
If we're gonna make the concept of president obsolete, then what I'm gonna need to see innovation wise is something that is as powerful as torrenting and like free, you know, like movement of information did for the, you know, collectivized version of I'm going to the store to rent this DVD. You know. Yeah. I need to see a version of that where, like, real things or solutions are moving in that direction.
Well, like in a model of the world that's not accurate of the reality, you have a concept like, okay, everyone could just vote over their smartphones and we'd all have direct representation. And then somebody in the back of the room says, what happens when they hack that, you know, and they start messing with it. So what is the real problem? Is it that we don't have the technology to actually represent ourselves? No, that's not our problem. We all have these devices or, you know, we know people who have these devices and you could actually directly represent yourself and vote and we could actually, you know, have a fair world. But what's the problem with that? The history of corruption in the past. If you don't look at that, you're like, we could all have that. And it's like, well, why do we still have this corruption that's been plaguing humanity? Oh, because that's always going to go on. That's part of freedom, that some people are going to break rules or make rules or whatever, and that goes on. So I think knowing that that has existed the whole time humanity's existed, we just have to figure out, it's like, that's going to go on. How can we have like the lowest amount of people being damaged from that process that we can't really do anything about? Right? Are we damaging less people having a drug war in this country where everything's prohibited and only the strongest and most ruthless people are in control? Or might we have, you know, a different result under freedom where less people are victimized and you know?
Well, I mean, all of those things are outgrowth of a system that doesn't work anyway. Because I'm thinking as you said this, and this is a separate subject, and I'll just touch on it. What if, because people always say, you know what the problem is in politics? It's money. Get the money out of politics, you'd probably be fine. You know, it's like saying, let's get the nuts away from the squirrels. You know, it's like that's what they do. They get the nuts. Yeah. The people in politics are there because it is this coercive way of redistributing resources in their favor. It's like saying, let's get the politics out of politics, you know. And I think that even if you could, like, let's just imagine you could get all the corruption out of politics. And you have a system that people, what do they use their phone? Is this how it works? You use your phone and you pick your representative.
Yeah.
Well, imagine this poor bastard who now, his name is Jim, he's 58, he retired from his job, he wanted to do public service. Now he has to represent the needs of 500,000 different people.
Yeah, I don't get how that works even in a perfect world.
It's not going to because it's a monopoly. Right. And in every single case, a monopoly is going to...
Do we have to pay like a fee to Parker's Brothers to say that word?
It's
lowercase monopoly.
Monopoly, yeah. I mean, like literally, I mean, if you ask people on the street, like, okay, can you describe to me the engineering and architectural principles of the anatomy of conflict? Conflicts inside of yourself, conflicts between you and people that you care about.
And that's right there. They would not be able to define that because they do not know how to solve such.
Right.
So right here, you know, it's like this is like another pain point I'm putting out to all the subscribers. Could you please solve for me how to make it far more sexy and apparently, you know, desirable for people to really be able to measure that actual architecture of conflict and specifically, you know, the actual engineering principles to create harmony so that people are connected, so they actually can be creative like this and then therefore innovate solutions, which are obviously going to be pluralistic, like pluralities. Like when people say the words, the society, the culture, the system, and I see plural things in reality, of course, I see systems that are designed to do what they do. I see very much cultures, plural, doing like living like near each other. But people are often using those words very powerfully, the culture, the society,
especially
the system.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think like it's, you know, like that's why some of what we're doing here is we're touching upon words for a very powerful reason, to change the language, to change and like basically even the word plurality is not very much in general parlance right now.
Sure.
But monopoly is, you know.
Out of many, one. Mono and poly.
I got a quick quote for you from Philip K. Dick. The basic control of reality is words. If you can control the meaning of the words, you can control the people that use them.
So, yeah. Yeah, from my point of view, by the way, the architecture of conflict is fairly simple. It's boundaries and ownership and property not mutually known, understood, and respected. It's very, very simple. If you have that...
Equally enforced, I would think, too.
Like respected would be like that type of thing. Like internally respected is kind of an enforcement system rather than an external, you know, ooh, bad rich, gonna snap your hand, you know, kind of thing. So that's as far as I can go with it so far. Yeah.
Kevin, did you have any comment on the last
sure.
couple of minutes?
Yeah. You guys are touching on a lot of great points there. I could go in several different directions. I'll make a quick point on language. I think what it really comes down to with what you're saying there, something I've talked about as well, is there's a problem of universals in language, and there's a drive on the part of any dominant monoculture to make sure that their language is the most ubiquitous language over all others, to where everybody falls in line with what's being said and comes to the same understandings. And a lot of the things that this country was founded upon, aside from the bigotry and slavery and a lot of their own monopolies and things, was founded on the refusal to understand anymore, refusal to stand under. And it was an accepting of a diversity and plurality of languages that was supposed to kind of be a check on this happening here, you know, and this taking place again. So I think that language is extremely powerful in that regard. Now, while we can come to limited understandings, it's always good to recognize, and I think it's kind of what's enshrined in like the deistic thought and the letters between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and things like that, is that that freedom exists within a state of flux. And the reason why they were creating a limited government was they were trying to create a government so very limited. They knew it was a fallacy. They knew it was a fallacy at the time. But they were trying to create a government so very limited to stand against practical threats that were facing their interest. And like it was even a ridiculous problem of universals for them to think that they could claim for all the people on all the land in all of America that they were underneath that doctrine. That's ridiculous. But it worked out in a way that had never happened in the history of mankind. And that is recognizable. And now it's become so large, like all technology. The technology always goes from the smallest to the most complex, and it's become so large in congruence and parallel with the rise in population that we're so far from being able to be coherent as a society. So we can form little diverse factions of understanding and things like that, but the population has outstripped the ability for the illusion of representative government to stand. And that goes to the confusion, the question you asked a second ago about the confusion in the ruling class and why this confusion is beneficial to the ruling class. And I think it's immensely beneficial. And it's like a robot that's been set in motion that goes off and does its own things. It's like we have this television news, which is basically now a global, not national anymore, a global water cooler. I mean, you can watch CNN and you can watch them shift. And they'll bring in the British sounding anchors at night. They're really in Atlanta, but they make you think it's CNN International for a couple hours. You know, because it's enlarging the polity, it's enlarging the global body politic. And what it is it's programming. And so it becomes so sad because you hate to see in people you love them repeating things like a Freudian robot. You know, like, you know, you don't want to see that coming from somebody that you love and care about. You don't want to see them say, you know, X, Y, and Z that is like, you know, if I really wanted to, I could sit here and I could dissect the argument that you just made and tell you exactly which source you got it from. that talking point is from this person, and this has been said by this person, and you're combining these and acting like it's your knowledge when it was actually just something that came from this global water cooler, where they think, rather than history books and even encyclopedias, where you're at least learning a kind of a holistic worldview, even if it is lacking a lot of scarcity and things, now it's everything you need to know by the second. You know, here's what you need to know by the second. It's the Encyclopedia Paideia, the Trivium, by the second. Here's what you need to know. Here's the facts. Breaking news. The same shit we said a minute ago before the break. But here's
the shooter news. Visited, you know, Disney World.
Right. And yep. So and so it's all about changing perspectives and creating a small world versus big world perspective. So MSNBC has this project that they work with these multinational corporations and the CFR called, what's it called? The Global Citizen. Let's get all the best bands and make them sell out all together at once. You know, like to this global citizen united movement of global citizenry, you know, and it's just like the Washington Redskins or the New York Giants. That's bullshit. It's a bunch of guys with money that started a small football team that became something.
Got some matching clothes.
It doesn't belong to any city because cities don't belong to countries. You know, like the cities are an artificial, like to a large degree, like the way cities are run are an artificial unity where we pull resources from places that now need their resources back in order to deplete more land and keep doing that over and over again. There's no self-sustainability inborn in the city environment. And that's not some like anarcho-primitive argument. That's just reality. That's what we do. And like we can try our best to like with these small measures create, you know, rooftop gardens and don't do these things to fight back from it. But, you know, it's all about this, like it's. Let me ask this. What is a talking point? You know, like what is a talking point? It's something that's a soundbite. It's something of that they're spitballing for you to be able to repeat to other people. And so like when you have the Republican Party and they're so upset because Trump like talks outside of church, you know, he doesn't agree with all of the main things that Paul Ryan wants done or what this other guy wants done or what typically is a Republican thing. I mean, you got a Republican guy, Republican in small quotes, saying that he's against Planned Parenthood. Well, that's against everything that the Republican Party thinks. So it's all about these cybernetic feedback mechanisms of trying to keep people in check to sound bites. And just, you know, and CNN and MSNBC, you know, the reason why they do the way they do is because they're trying to catch people in airports on the way places. You know, you got to get people so they can spread that to the next guy and spread that. And it's just, it controls everything we think and everything we know. Whereas if we turned off the TV and we didn't own cable television, and I live out here where you couldn't possibly believe how rural I am right now, you know, I would never hear about these things. You know, like it would take like some guy on a horse or, you know, some guy traveling for a long way with a newspaper or something for me to hear about. You know, I mean, it's all about creating an all at onceness. You know, it's this all at onceness. And it's an attempt to get us all on the same page where we can use that same mechanism to do things like we're doing now. You know, like to bring different perspectives and do it that way. But it's all about maintaining the intrinsic value of the individual. Like that's what has to be constantly highlighted in like almost like a as the thing to set a precedent, because that's what societies are actually based upon. Whereas they want to confuse it and make it to where it's a top down, you know, hierarchical control.
Right. And that's what collectivism is. Mm-hmm. And you see similar things go on in other areas, but continuing to reinforce that model doesn't seem to work because, you know, it's like when our government in the United States acts outside of its constitutional rights that were laid down for how the government's supposed to act. It's like it denies the very rights it was built upon in order to establish authority in the name of those rights.